Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We highlight the Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans.
Join us as we talk chisme, comics, fandom, and beer.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 211. That's 211, guys. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hi, guys. How's everybody doing?
Hi. Good, thank you. I'm coming off of a couple of days of being glued to my phone and TikTok because of the viral Who the Fuck Did I Marry
series. Oh, yes.
If you don't know, you need to get on TikTok and look up Reesa Teesa, R-E-E-S-A-T-E-E-S-A. She dropped a series on February 14th called Who the Fuck Did I Marry? And it is a 50-episode story playlist of this whole entire drama, trauma, debacle of her meeting, dating, marrying, and divorcing this pathological liar. And I I was about 5 days late. Like, it dropped on the 14th and I didn't get it into it until the 19th. I had my phone with the volume turned all the way up, playing while I was in the shower. I had my earbuds when I would go to my PT appointments, and while I was doing my PT exercises, I plugged my phone into the car, and anytime I would drive anywhere, I had it playing. Oh my God, it was nonstop me watching this series. And once I finished it, my entire FYP is just nothing but now other creators talking about this story. He actually came out of the, well, someone outed him because she was using fake names, but someone outed him. So he came out of the woodwork and started like saying stuff on TikTok. His ex-wives and ex-girlfriends started coming out. Like, it was this whole, and I am so here for it. And now, and each episode was 10 minutes long. So this is, I guess this is a new feature that TikTok has. Used to only be 3 minutes, but now you can do 10 minutes. Each one was 10 minutes long. And now there are other people coming on and telling their stories. And this morning I was in the kitchen listening to another woman. Her series was called The Lies He Told Me. Oh my God. I'm like, where do these women find these men? Where do these women find these men, and what is wrong with you? Like,
and also, like, how are you?
How many red flags?
How do you fall for it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. How many red flags does there have to be before you're like, you know what? It's not worth it. Like, I know you're lying. Like, this one this morning, she already done caught him in like at least 5 lies, and she still married him. What is wrong with her?
Oh yeah, no, I actually don't watch her directly. I watch another creator who condenses like 5 hours into like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, so that works better for me. But my God, I'm serious, like, okay, he didn't go with you to get your DNC for when you had a miscarriage. He didn't get you your car that he swore up and down he was going to get. He was going to put down money for a house that he kept for some reason. And I'm like, dude, why did you stay? Why did you stay? But no, it's very entertaining, extremely entertaining.
It was. Like, I treated it as kind of like a podcast. I wasn't watching it while I was playing. I just like had my earphones in. But it is so entertaining, but it is also very sad that this poor woman had to go through this trauma. But on the bright side, she talks about in her episode, she talked about how it was her dream trip to go to London and Paris. And he kept promising it to her. He one day showed up with an itinerary and was like, I'm taking you to London. And also, her dream car was a BMW, blue BMW X5 series with a cognac interior. And so he was like, I'm going to buy you this car. They went out and they test drove car after car after car after car. And there was always an excuse for something. And now that her story just took off and she went viral, she's getting a BMW. Oh. And they crowdfunded to send her to Paris.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I guess London. But she's getting lots of cool support. Things and support. And, you know, everybody, even though the story, you know, she went through trauma and she's traumatized and says that she's not ready to date quite yet. And this happened in 2020 through 2021. She is a Recent. Very good storyteller. And so that is what everybody is just really, you know, exactly what you said. Entertained by. And so I know I was hooked. And the now it's people are coming out and being funny. So like there was a TikTok of a creator who is a woman, and she slams the door open to her bedroom where her husband is still sleeping, and she's like, what's your social security number? Where'd you go to school? You need to be talking on all your phone calls on speakerphone so I can hear everything. Where's your mama? Who's your mama? And the husband's just like, what are you talking about? It's really funny. People are really being creative with it. But again, if you haven't been on the Who the Fuck Did I Marry train on TikTok, go to the creator Risa Tisa. And if you just type in who the F, it pops right up. So,
like I said, I'm an... So the guy that condenses the material to less than 50 or 100 episodes, we're on part 3. So he's in the process of recording part 3. And he's like, if you want to hear more, just comment below. And I'm like, just do it. Don't let us cut. Just do it. Just want to see it. I want to hear it. He's a good storyteller too. So, oh my God. But it is, it's like watching a train, car, airplane crash at once. Just incredible. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I don't know why she stuck it out so long. I mean, is he that good of a liar? I don't know. Like, there were points that it even said that when he would get on the phone with like his partner or his lawyer or his realtor, that nobody was actually on the other side of the phone.
He claimed to talk to his brother every day, that he was so close to his brother, and that it was his routine at 6 a.m. in the morning to talk to his brother because he was on his way to work and his brother was coming home from work, so it was perfect timing. And she talked about how he would say, hey, John said, I'm just using the name John says hi, and she'd be like, hey, John, how you doing? And he'd be like, she says, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. He would be on a phone call with the brother anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour every day, and come to find out there was never anybody on the other end.
What the fuck? I mean, well, I know.
So
another
he's
thing,
a pathological liar. Yes, he's crazy.
Yes.
Oh, and like, I mean, I know like people are desperate for love. Not me, though. You won't catch me slipping. But anyways, oh my God. I do feel really bad for this woman, but at the same time, I'm just all like...
And she comes out and she's like, look, I promise to tell the story the way that the story happened, even when it makes me look bad. And believe me, I know that I made some big mistakes and I overlooked a lot of red flags. And when, you know, when she's telling her story, I'm like... What? Why did you?
But you
do
know what?
That?
Points to her for acknowledging it, though, because then that's how we know it's true. Is she's just like, you know what? Yeah, I did this, and like, yeah, it was dumb, but this is what continued to happen, and it's just like, I have her TikTok right here. I'm gonna watch this afterwards.
It's addictive.
Oh my God. I'm hooked now.
Yeah.
Like
it's insane. It should get its own Netflix series or something.
Yes. A funny thing is that he came out to say that he's already on his 16th day of Netflix interviews because he is going to tell his story because his side is just as important. And everyone's like, what are you talking about, 16 days? She barely dropped it 8 days ago.
Why? What a pathological liar.
Pathological liar. He's lying. And people are already like, no, like, let's hear his side of the story. You're going to hear the side of the story of the liar.
Right.
Oh, my God. People are so... This is how this situation happens. Some bitch is going to believe him, and then he's got his next victim.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course. Ugh. But, yes,
And I'm just like,
dude. And yeah. I'm like, for me, I'm like, what is his end game? I mean, have you guys seen Uncut Gems on Netflix with Adam Sandler? Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Oh, yes.
That movie stressed me out. It stressed me out. Get rid of your mistress. Stop trying to make a deal with these diamonds that aren't yours. Like, what the
Yes.
Like, why can't you just live a normal life? Take up gardening. I don't know. Like, your life is so much chaos because you made it that. And I do not know why that is so appealing to you. I mean, if anything, I think it takes years out of your life just to keep
all this. Psychologically speaking,
you know,
if they grew up in that environment, to them that's normal. That's how it's supposed to be. That's how it should be. Is it healthy? No, but is it what they know and what they're going to perpetuate? Yeah. So I'm curious.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it.
Dude, my heart.
Y'all gonna catch me at 12 a.m. being like, "What the fuck?"
Oh my! My chest started hurting just thinking about all that stuff. So much drama. Oh, I mean, I love drama. Let me tell you.
Yeah. But
this was just off the rails. Just oh my God. Whew, catch your breath. All right, guys, now it's time for Chisme de la Semana. And I don't have too much chisme that everybody who has the internet already knows, but I just thought I'd mention it because I'm a little disappointed. Madam Web, the movie, has 13% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my gosh, that's so sad.
It really is.
I told you that.
Even because they couldn't mention Spider-Man, they went out of their way to mention Spider-Man. And then for some time, they said that Tom Holland was going to be making a cameo appearance. Nothing. Then they said, even Dakota Johnson said, I haven't watched the movie. And a lot of the crew said that the script was constantly changing. So they constantly had to re-record and stuff like that. And, you know, just goes to show Hollywood is fucking weird because the people that made Dracula, The Untold Story or some shit, like all these like movies that didn't do so well, those were the people who made Madam Web. And it's like... You didn't learn from the first movie.
Why do you keep letting these people make movies?
Exactly. Thank you.
Nepotism.
I was just like, wow.
You know, I didn't even know anything about the movie. They didn't do a lot of marketing for it. And now that you're saying that they weren't allowed to mention Spider-Man, that makes sense to me. Because when the marketing I did see, I'm like, nobody even knows what this is. Like, what the hell? Who the hell? I mean, I know who Madam Web is because I read the comics, but nobody knows who Madam Web is. And how are you going to do a fucking movie about a Spider-Man character without Spider-Man in it? And so I was still interested because I do like Spider family characters. I haven't seen it, but, I told Eddie, you know those Facebook videos or YouTube videos that come up every once in a while that people share making fun of those homemade Spider-Man movies made in India?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's what it looked like to me. It was that freaking caliber of cinematography. I was like, that's what that Madame Web look like to me? Like, it was made in India by some college students. And so it doesn't surprise me.
Hey, some of those India Spider-Man movies are actually pretty good.
They're it doesn't surprise me that there's only 13%. I'll still watch it because I have a low bar for being entertained. And also because I do know the characters and I am interested in Spider Family storylines. But that makes me sad because it gives a bad, and I don't think it's not a Marvel movie, right?
No, I think Sony.
I mean, it has the Marvel branding.
Right? Isn't that who has a Spider-Man?
Yeah. So,
which confuses me as to why they can't use Spider-Man.
Yeah. But I mean, they use Spider-Man in the animated movies. So I don't know what the parameters are around their agreements. But I feel like right now Marvel movies and Marvel adjacent movies have a really bad rap, and people are just complaining about even the Marvel TV shows, and it's really frustrating because some of them are really good. Like Ms. Marvel I really enjoyed Ms. Marvel. I don't enjoy the fact that she's a mutant now, but I enjoyed the TV show definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes. I haven't seen Marvels yet either. It's on streaming now, and I want to take some time to watch that. All I hear and all I see everywhere is just people complaining about Marvel. Oh, woke Marvel, and oh, Disney ruined them, and oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you guys are just, you just all want something to complain about.
This is true, but from the stuff that they're saying, I mean, the people that made Madame Web are like the ones that were behind the Mobius movie, and that wasn't very good either. So,
yeah, I haven't seen that one either.
It's unfortunate because it had such a strong cast, and it's so unfortunate that the storyline wasn't there, and then a lot of the audio was recorded after recording the imagery. I don't know if that
it's a movie literally made for the 90s
probably. it's unfortunate. It was female cast and a very strong female actors, and for it to have flopped so bad, it's unfortunate. And then they're like, see, you can't have a woman-led movie do good in the box office.
That's the takeaway that all these people have, and it's very annoying.
It really
is. It's not hire better directors or do better story scripts or anything. No, it's the women's fault, of course.
Of course. All right, guys, it's now time for On My Radar. Kristen, what is on your radar?
So this week I have a book on my radar called Cemetery Kids Don't Die. And the title definitely caught my attention. I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. What is this about? And so I went to onipress.com because it is an Oni comic book, and I read the description, and it basically says the 21st century sucks hard, but it's made somewhat tolerable by the latest and greatest media innovations. Enter the Dream Wave, the first gaming console played entirely while you sleep. The obsession of millions around the globe, it's also the one point of solace for four friends known as the Cemetery Kids, who spend their nights roaming the endless maps of the most brutal horror game ever created as they seek to dethrone the King of Sleep, the Dream Wave's biggest, baddest, and most mysterious boss. Which was fun until one of them doesn't wake up and finds their consciousness locked inside a horror game that is anything but imaginary. Now the three remaining Cemetery Kids must navigate a forbidden landscape to rescue their friend and pray that the secret lurking at its center doesn't follow them home. So this was written, is written by Zach Thompson, and the artist is Daniel Irizarry, and I actually downloaded a digital copy of issue number one and read it, and I really enjoyed it a lot. It really is a unique idea. Well, to me it was anyway. A game that you can play when you are sleeping. And then, of course, we have seen, you know, storylines before of like consciousness being stuck in games and stuff like that. But the horror aspect of the game being horror that they're playing, and then there's a some character development in the first issue of some relationships that the characters have with each other. Issue one definitely did a really good job of setting down some of what's happening, enough to get you intrigued and enough to be like, what the heck's going on? I need to find out. I need to read more. So that's what's on my radar. Cemetery Kids, Never or Don't Die by Zach Thompson. It is available by Oni Press. You can get it at your local comic book store. You can get it online digitally at onipress.com.
So I wonder, if you're playing a video game when you're sleeping, do you wake up tired?
Good question. You know, one of the things in the issue was that the game would wake them up when they're like, when they're, I don't know, their turn was over or whatever, and they weren't able to go back until a certain amount of time had gone by. And it has, they were talked some, a little bit about something to do with their REM cycles and stuff like that. So that's a good question. I don't know.
That's pretty cool that they even got into that kind of side where you can't go back into the game until a certain amount of hours. That's pretty good. That's that's attention to detail. That's pretty interesting.
And that I like that, but also if you're like, you're gonna get into like, what is it, dreaming mostly happens in what, the last 10-15 minutes of sleep or something like that?
Yeah, I think dreaming happens in your REM state, which is the state right before you are able to wake up. So, and you don't, we go through multiple cycles of it, and it's the state where you are able to wake up. Some of us don't wake up, but that's the part of your sleep where either you're awake enough to turn over, or you're awake enough to hear that cat outside, or, you know, or you're awake enough to be like, crap, I have to pee again.
So that's why I wake up at 3 a.m. Oh my God. Okay. So, but that is cool. I like that. I don't think so. I mean, I don't, unless it's a nightmare, then I'd be waking up sweating and tired.
Yeah.
So maybe if it's a horror game theme.
All right, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's that time. It's la hora de la cervecita. Ooh, it is. My favorite.
Yes, it is.
We're going old school today. And let me tell you why I say that. Back in the early reaches of my memory of being introduced to craft beer, I'm quoting the quote unquote craft beer. I was in my hometown. And for those of you who don't know, my hometown is a small Central California town called Hanford. And it is a very, very small town with not very many options of where to go and get good beer. I don't even think there's a BevMo in Hanford. You probably can get your good beer from Target. Actually, no, there's that craft beer winery that we went to.
Yes.
Where you got that glass. Yeah.
I think that's new, isn't it? Like, it doesn't.
No, it's been around for a while. I mean, newer. It wasn't there when I lived there. But within the last 15, 20 years.
Okay.
So I was at the local Hole in the Wall, and I'm sitting at the stools, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get me a beer. I don't want Coors. I don't want Bud. I don't want Bud Light or any of that. Let me have that Fat Tire. This was probably one of the first quote unquote craft beers that I ever tried. This incredible. And Blue Moon. Those two were the ones that they had on draft. So now that I know more about craft beer, and I know a little bit more about the brewery history of Fat Tire and Blue Moon, it's not something that I drink I don't even remember what it tastes like. So this is a true review because it's been so long.
This She's grown up. She's got taste in class now.
Yes.
So, but it is by Belgian Brewing. So
yes, and it came in that multi-pack that I got at Costco, the Belgian Brew variety pack. And I sent this one out to everybody because I was like, I need to fill my pack with the most amount of beer that I can so that we have enough beer to last us at least a month. So that's why I sent this one. Not because I was attracted to the can or anything. It was just just some space to fill.
It was convenient.
As a space filler.
Yeah, space filler. So, but it's beer and it's craft. So let's take a gander.
So it says made with premium ingredients.
Like the idea of a Belgian.
This bright and balanced beer is brewed to be easy drinking and easy on the planet. Brewed to protect the only planet with beer. I don't know what that means.
Now we know of.
It's high quality, low impact. It says since 1991. Yes, this is, yeah.
Yeah, I probably drank it in 2004 or 2005, I would say.
Well, let me say this. It's not disappointing. Like, I thought maybe it would be a little bit bland, but it's not. It's actually really refreshing. I would have to say that I like it more than regular lagers like Modelo or...
You shut your mouth, you lying whore.
Well, I just don't seem to like it. I don't like Corona. I don't like Bud Light. I don't like...
I am such a Modelo convert. You don't even know. This has nothing on Modelo, but Modelo out of the bottle. Cans, no. And Modelo Draft. Modelo Draft is
Modelo Negro.
Top. Then Modelo bottle and then cans if I have to, but... Cans taste, I don't really like the taste. This, I am so happy that your taste buds and palate are appreciating it because it's bland AF to me.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with Kristen. It's like I'm drinking a slightly more flavorful Corona. Like I'm drinking the idea of a Belgium. Like someone like just crushed wheat or barley or I don't know what it is that they made this with into water and made like a White Claw version of beer.
It is like you said, like Jen said, there is a hint of flavor there for me. I want to preface also everything I'm saying with it's not bad, if that makes sense. It's not bad.
It's just what I meant. But I'm not disappointed.
It doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I would still pick this over a Corona or a Tecate or a beer or like a Bud Light.
That's what I meant to say.
But yes, 100% Ben Sarah, this does have more flavor than a Corona. Corona tastes more watery than this, but this is definitely, it is very bland to me.
Yeah.
I think Modelo has more flavor than that, but Corona, Bud Light, Coors, all those lagers.
Yeah.
And this isn't considered a lager. It's an actual Belgian beer, right?
Yeah. But I mean,
very light.
Very light. Absolutely. I mean, this is, like you said, it's closer to water, like I said, I'm not disappointed. I thought it was going to be like maybe a Corona or a Tecate, but no, it definitely... I mean, it's refreshing because, you know, water is refreshing, but I'm not disappointed.
I think that just does it for itself. It's like, I'm drinking this and all I can think of is just like, who put water in my beer?
Yeah. That's funny. The fact that this is so water-like, I was thirsty. I'm supposed to be drinking lots of water today. I have a bottle here because this is like the fourth or fifth one I've been drinking today because I have a 20-mile run tomorrow. This is so low impact, not only on the earth, but on my body. That I'm drinking it because it's actually cold and I was thirsty and I'm supposed to be drinking water today.
I'm supposed to be drinking water anyway. Right, this is just savory water.
So this would be like something that you could take to a party and share it and they won't be like, oh, it's so hoppy. You know, this is just one of those.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I'm ready to rate it. I really have no key points, no back flavor, no lingering goodness. It's just simple, easy.
It's like when you think of a stock image or like a stock flavor of beer, this is it.
Yeah.
Like this is the base. This is like, it just says beer. What kind of beer? Nothing. It's just beer.
So our rating scale is a 5-point scale where 1 out of 5 is very unsatisfied. A 2 out of 5 is regularly unsatisfied. A 3 out of 5 right in the middle is neutral. A 4 out of 5 is satisfied. And a 5 out of 5 is very satisfied. It is fizzy, so it's making me burp. But I'm going to start, and I am giving it a 2 out of 5. I was actually going between 2 and 3 because I am kind of just neutral. The flavor is also just neutral. Like, would I...
It's not bad.
Right. Like, would I drink it if someone gave it to me for free? Yes. There are definitely beers that I would be like, no, thank you. Not even for free. I'm not going to drink that.
Exactly.
So, okay. So I talked myself into a 3. So 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm also neutral on this, and I think that just speaks for itself. Neutral. That's neutral. It.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 2. Like, I don't hate it. I think if I really hated it, it would be a 1. But I also I don't like it enough for it to be like even more like on the neutral. You get me?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, no. I think a 2 is a good place for me. Yeah, 2.5. There we go.
Okay. That has been our beer review. All right, guys, it's now time for our book review. What are we reviewing today?
Today, we are reviewing Astro and Inez, La Novela by... Hold on. They have it right here. Written by Llewellyn Polanco, drawn by Juan Romero, lettered by Sean Reinhardt, and production designed by Steve Blackwell. So, this is the cover.
Look at the back, it's so cute!
Why do our colors look different?
I don't know.
Lighting.
I have bad lighting.
What lighting does? Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, cute.
Oh. Go ahead, Kristen.
This is one shot.
I was just saying it's so cute.
This is a one shot.
Yes, it's a one shot / anthology.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like a collection of 4 like little stories all wrapped into one. I really, really enjoyed this. It was so cute. Mm-hmm. Like, even, oh my God. Okay. So there in the beginning, her room right here, or it's a mess. Let me show you. Girl, same. It's the depression room. It's the like, oh my fucking God, what am I doing? Like, I just want to watch TV and then everything else falls apart around me. And low key, this is like maybe one of the reasons I do want to get a dog is like, they'll motivate me to get out of the house because having a cat, the cat's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Not even for a walk.
Yeah.
And it's like she, in the first story, she has broken up with her girlfriend and she falls into a depressive slump. Her dog is like noticing, or is like, it's like, hey, where's my like favorite plushie that we can see right here in the cover, which is this cute little penguin with a bow tie. a bow tie or like whatever. It's really, really cute. But like in like the mess of her room, the toy gets lost. So the dog is just like, hey, clean this up. I need to find my toy. And it's kind of like, the dog's name is Astro and the girl's name is Ines, and she's a queer Dominican.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's an Afro Latina. And I really, really like her. And it's so funny because we're talking, like, I think it wraps in like, we're like, how are some people like this? And I was like, some people are just dramatic. They can't be anything else. And she is like, but it's like a good dramatic, like no me quieres, me odias. Like it's a dramatic that one, I can be, and two, that is like, you know, tolerable, keeps things entertaining. And so I really, really love this. This was a really cute book, and it almost convinced me that I really actually do want a dog. Like, A plus effort. Like, I don't hate dogs. I like them a lot, but I don't know about actually owning one. It's a lot. Yeah,
it's like, it's a lot of work. It's like, I always liken it to having a baby that never grows up. At least the baby starts to learn how to take care of itself and can entertain itself. But the dog is always going to need you to take it out to go to the bathroom. You got to pick up its poop. You got to make sure that if you go on vacation, you have to feed it or send it somewhere where they can feed them. And I also like pets, dogs, cats, hamsters. I had a rat when I was a kid, but I just don't have it in me to be that responsible.
Same. I'm like, I can't win. Like, I don't want kids, so I don't want pets either.
I can't even keep my succulents alive. Don't get me right. That.
I can't. I bought a plant almost 2 years ago, and it was doing really well, but now it like finally died, and I was just like trying to keep it from not dying, but it didn't happen. And now I'm just like, well, if that was a kid, it'd be dead and I'd be in jail. So
Sarah has to come over and take care of my Ello plant.
Oh, that's kind of true. Yeah. Oh my god.
LMAO.
I super love this book. I have two dogs, and one of them looks like Astro.
A little terrier.
Yeah. So I totally love this comic anthology. It was really cool. And you know what the coolest part for me was? Reading the back matter, where Llewellyn Polanco clearly says that she went to New York Comic Con and that she was watching a panel, and a guest speaker said that if you couldn't find representation, you were looking for create it yourself. And that kind of stuck by her, and that's why she created what she created. And I thought, panels do make a difference in the audience's life. I'm like, now I'm like, just, I have another level of appreciation for being on panels at conventions. So, so I mean, you just never know, right? Like, who's listening and who's paying attention and whose life you can alter by just a few words. Or it's just really amazing that was the reason she created these comics. And this one is freaking beautiful. It's super cute. The Astro has kind of a little personality that when she was like down in the funk, Astro urinates inside the apartment so that she's like, oh my god, I gotta take you out for a walk. And lo and behold, when they go out on a walk, they come across the neighbor, and Astro kind of attacks the neighbor, not in a aggressive way, but in a loving way. And so it kind of gets them to talking, and they actually eventually get together as well. So Astro has this kind of little drama to him, but also he's really aware of what Ines needs. And I thought that was super adorable. And I mean, everything was super cute. I mean, I love the one where they went camping. I love when they go to the vet. It's just super cute. And the dialogue Ines has where she like goes between Spanglish and English, I thought that was just really beautifully done. I can hear her in my head. A tone of voice, an accent, in the way she's written. Oh, yeah.
I hear Dominican.
Yes,
I hear,
absolutely.
Like, as I was reading it, I could hear her Dominican voice, and I was just so like, yeah.
Yes.
I can picture it.
Yes.
It's like she's speaking to me right now.
Yes, yes. And it's just really, really great. I really, really loved it. The artwork was really sensational, too.
Yeah,
I was,
it's really cute.
It's really, I don't know how to call it. Like, it reminds me of Death, the High Cost of Living, where the lines are, I wouldn't say clean. What would you call them? Like, yeah, I guess clean. Like, I don't know what to, I don't know, but it's just, it's dynamic. It's clean. It's, detailed. And I don't know. It's the movement of the patients, of the characters is so spot on with the story itself. And I just thought, that was just such a great kind of companionship of writer and artist. I really enjoyed it quite a lot. I didn't think I would enjoy it this much. I mean, I kind of love it. I really do. I really kind of love it, dude. Yeah. And I am in love with Astro. He's his own little personality, and I just love it.
He is. Yeah. The dog was, I think, my favorite character because he was super sassy, had an attitude, but was there and supportive when you needed him.
Yes.
In the back matter, where Llewellyn actually talks a little bit about what Sarah was talking about being at the New York Comic Con panel, she talks about in the beginning about how writing a story with a queer Afro-Latina lead was very important to her. It brings her joy to have a mix of Spanish dialogue in her comics to represent the Spanglish that folks from her walks of life speak every day, and something that she wants her readers to know that they will continue to see in her stories. And that's absolutely true, because as I was going online and I was looking her up, and I went to her Instagram and I went to some other Google related things that I found that she had another story online, and that one was called Mi Hermana's Keeper. And that story was really kind of cool. It was like a sci-fi,
domestic violence
mystery, but like, yeah, domestic violence, interpersonal violence story, that's
like fiction. Yes. Oh, that's what it's, sorry. Very speculative, like, because it's kind of sci-fi, but also kind of like alternate universe slash, like, yeah. So speculative fiction. Yeah.
So it actually is a story that when you're reading it, tells you it happens in the world of this other creator's world that they created, where in this world your eyes turn, was it purple or blue?
Purple.
A certain amount of minutes before 73 minutes before you are going to die. Imagine if you knew your eyes turned purple and you knew that you only had 73 minutes left to live. And so the kind of like the storyline proposes, what would you do if you knew that, if you were faced with only 73 minutes? And like Sarah mentioned, there is some domestic violence storyline that is happening. And if you read the title again, Mi Hermana's Keeper, you might actually kind of get some clue about to what the story is about. But I definitely would recommend you reading it. I really enjoyed it a lot. It was just a short little one-shot story, but it was really good. And definitely Llewellyn continues to bring culture and her Latinidad and her Spanglish and everything into the characters that were in that storyline as well.
Oh, absolutely. That, and the art was really well done in that one as well. And that, I mean, that could be like a freaking Twilight Zone episode or something. Like, it was just, it was actually really good.
Definitely.
Yeah. I actually started reading it like two pages in. So when I finished it, I went back because I was confused about the purple eyes. But when I read it, I was like, oh, this, yes. It's a definite yes for me. But yes, it really, and it sort of like not only do you read it, but you also kind of wonder, what would I do with those 73 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
I still don't have an answer for that, but oh, maybe like sex and a lot of drugs all at once.
Yeah, and that's gonna be what takes you out.
Yeah,
so I'm kind of like,
yeah. Good point, Jen. Go ahead with what you're gonna say.
It kind of makes me wonder if like the purple eyes are like a you're going to die, or like this is like you're at a crux, mm-hmm. like you could die, like but if you make the right choice, you don't have to die. But yeah, you know,
I was thinking the same thing, because in some, because we see more than one person's eyes turn in this particular issue. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, is it a situation of cause or effect? Like it definitely brought that question up. And so it actually got me interested in maybe going back and learning more about the world that this storyline that this comic existed in, because I found it to be a really very interesting concept for, you know, a world where this happens. So that was really, really cool.
And it's funny because it's really funny because I was talking about fate with a friend earlier at work today, because we had been talking the day before about, you know, stuff that was happening and then, or the stuff that could happen. And then it all kind of came to a head today at work. And I was just like, odd that we were talking about this literally just yesterday and it happened. I was like, it's like, it almost sounds like fate, but I don't believe in fate. But then this also, like, another thing that comes out is like, so the purple eyes, you're gonna die, but I'm like, but do you have to die? Like, is it is like fate a thing that happens in this world? And then like, okay, like then that's just how it is. And how do you operate in a world where you know fate is a thing? Like, I don't know. I don't know. So, but it does make me interested. I do want to know more about that world. And I also really enjoyed her story. Her storytelling method is very episodical, very, very well done. Like, it's not, there's definitely a lot of like open-ended ways that it can continue and like keep going on. But in the moment of itself, I think it's perfectly encapsulated. I think she really has mastered kind of this very short story format, because you get your intro, you get your problem, you get your resolution, and then on to the next one. Whether that and that's one of the first things that they teach you in school for like writing and stuff like that, is kind of like the episodical storytelling. For me, I particularly found it challenging because I was just always like, no, I gotta put in 1,000,000 things to like build up to it. But the way that I have found that people who are really good storytellers usually are really, really good at this kind of episodical storytelling, where it's short, sweet, to the point, and like maybe there's not a full resolution, but there's a resolution in and of itself. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily follow that straight through format as well, but it tends to as well. And I think she does a really good job with it.
I think it's worth mentioning that this story actually was originally kickstarted back in 2023. And the original goal was $3,000, and 186 backers ended up raising $6,144.
Wow.
So a little over twice as much than what she was looking for. So I think that says a lot. Definitely slice of life books, I think resonate with a lot of people. So I'm really happy to know that she had that much success support with it. And another thing that I saw, and I'm trying to find where I saw it, but she is currently nominated, a story of hers is currently nominated for an award. And I'm trying to see where I actually saw that. I think I saw it in Instagram. But there was a story of hers that got nominated for something. While you guys talk amongst yourself, I'll look to see what it was.
Yeah, no, I just think it's really amazing. amazing. The way that she executes this, and in this anthology, the short stories all started and ended in their own little pace, but nothing bled into the other one aside from the characters, which I thought was really clever. And she is able to tell kind of a full short story in a few pages. And I'm just like, wow, she did such an amazing job. And I just, you know, Daffy doesn't have a penguin, but Taffy has an owl. We don't have a name for the owl, but she's constantly like has her little like face on top of the owl, and she doesn't like any other toys aside from the owl.
That's so cute.
Yeah,
and we, and it is really cute.
And you better believe it, Frank has tried to buy all sorts of toys for this poor Taffy, and no, it's all the owl. It's all about the owl. So and I really like the fact that she takes all the representation she wanted to see. She's obviously queer and also a dog lover and also Dominican and also bilingual. So I love the fact that she highlights all of this in her books. And as far as I can tell, which I've only read these two comics of hers, but I think she does a wonderful, just beautiful job executing this. Absolutely. So I think we are ready to rate the books. And I think we should rate them both. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Oh. Actually, right before we do that, I did want to talk a bit more about who published this.
Oh, yes.
CEX Publishing. And mostly because I saw the back and they like do other things. So definitely like there's this one. I feel like you ordered this at one point.
Yeah.
Kristen. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I try to order things from some of the smaller publishing companies, and just by looking on here, I know I've ordered 7 Years in Darkness, I've ordered Mother Russia, and I think that might be the only ones that I see here that I recognize.
Yeah, there was another one, there's this one I thought, I'm very surprised that it didn't ring, Hell Nebraska, that seems up your alley. And like I mostly want to talk because on the back it says here, for more information or to order direct, visit CEX Comics, but they also said available at your local comic shop or bookstore. And they have a little thing that says like to find the comic shop near you, call 1-888-COMIC-BOOK, which I thought was really, really cool. But CEX Publishing, and I'm on their website, CEXcomics.com, and on their about us they say CEX is driven to support comics creators, retailers, and fans. We believe that comics are more than just a reading experience, they're a community. They're enthusiastic and original, and they're authentic, and we are too. The focus of CEX is on you, the fan, the creator, the retailer. We want to be successful, and we need to be in order to bring more great content to the market. But our goal is promoting the importance of great storytelling, diverse content, and fostering an engaged and positive community. And then they have a relatively very small staff on here. And then they have a list of retailers and stuff like that. But they're like, I know we've read, Past the Last Mountain. I think you ordered this one before, too. So, like, I know you ordered Mother Russia. And it did, like, pretty well, like, from what I recall. But these are all, like, interesting titles that I would 100% be, like, up for reading some of them as well. So there's just an indie comic book publishing company, and this is what I love about indie comic publishers. They're always willing to take a risk because they know that either it's that for fostering community, but also because why not?
Yeah, so I finally found the award that she is nominated for, and it's Negative Space Fall 2023 Annual Comic Book Writing Competition semi-finalist, and she was the semi-finalist for her story called Solace. So I am interested, and she just posted this 4 days ago, so even though it says Fall 2023, I'm guessing that the award is happening now, but it is specifically featuring books that came out in the fall of last year. So there are quite a couple of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 10 stories that were nominated. So, and this is a writing competition, and she's a semifinalist. So that says a lot about like how Jen was saying, her writing technique and just her overall ability to tell a good story. So if you're interested, definitely go to tcl.comics on Instagram. And I believe TCL Comics is also her website. So for more information on Llewellyn.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and rate the book. What is our rating scale, Kristen?
So our rating scale is a scale of 1 to 3 conchas, with 3 conchas being the most that Jen's mom ever let her eat. 1 sitting, so that was the absolute best. But if it's a book that we feel doesn't quite fit on that scale, we have our own little rating scale that we use as well. So do you want to go ahead and get started, Sarah?
Yes, I'm going to give it the whole panadería. I'm so impressed with her amazing storytelling ability, and the artwork on these comic books was really, really well done. And the storytelling was just amazing. I mean, I'm comparing it to The Twilight Zone. For God's sakes, that's like amazing. So the whole panadería and a capa champurrado, I am floored, and I am endeared with the Astro and Ines comic, because it reminds me of Taffy and her little owls. So I love it. I love it. I can't wait to read actually more from her.
I would love to read more about Astro. Even if it was just a book about Astro, I would love that. So I also am going to give it the whole panadería. Both stories were really engaging and interesting. And even though the Astro and Inez book was a compilation of different short stories, I feel like even though they were short stories, so much happened within those stories, and you got like so much action and character development. And I definitely hope that we see more of Astro and Inez in the future. Jen, how about you?
I'm going to give it also 3 conchas because I really loved it. And look, if you can convince me to almost get a dog, you've done a good job. I really, really loved it. I think it was really well written. I think it was well drawn. I love the it's pretty like thick line art, but I personally really like it. Like, some people like either don't really like kind of the heavy outline, but I do. I think it makes it look very charming and more like kind of like slice of lifey, almost kind of like cartoonish, sort of, or like cartoon vibes, or like webtoon. Mm-hmm. Cartoon vibes. There we go. So I really, really enjoyed it. So it's going to be 3 conchas from me.
And that has been our book review. All right, guys, now it's time for En la Librería. Jen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have for you, hold on, I have the title right here. Balik Bayan, The Return Number 1, a Filipino horror comic.
Ooh.
Hereditary meets The Wailing when Ben and his father return to the Philippines to confront the spirit cursing their family. So, this is being kickstarted or dubbed by Allison O'Toole, who's from Toronto, Canada. Allison is the editor of comics, anthologies, and series, including Ignatz Award winner Shades of Fear and Eisner Award winner Public Domain. So we've actually read Shades of Fear, I think. I'm pretty sure we did.
That sounds familiar. It's an anthology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an anthology. Yeah. And I think it was also kickstarted, and that's how I know it, because I was just like, I know this. How did I come across this? So here's the story that they have on the Kickstarter page. It says, years ago, late at night, my father told me about the curse that has followed the men in my family for generations. That conversation was a spark of inspiration for Balik Bayan. After years of estrangement, a sudden tragedy forces Ben into contact with his father, bringing up memories from his youth that he'd rather forget. He must confront his broken relationship with his father before they face the malevolent force calling them back to their homeland. They will learn firsthand that the sins of our past will always find us, no matter how far we try to run. So this is from the writer Jeff Estrella. And then they have a picture of what I'm going to assume is going to be the cover art for this book. And it is spooky. So, Balik Bayan is named for the care packages that Filipinos living overseas send back to family in the Philippines. This book is a 24-page opening chapter of a story that draws from traditional Filipino folktales and is inspired by films like Hereditary, The Wailing, and The Farewell. It explores the often strained relationships between the children of immigrants and their parents and the difficulties of reconciling those two worlds. Wow, call me out.
This is so good. Oh my God.
It asks, what if those old stories of ghosts and monsters from back home were true? Ooh. I spent a lot of time thinking about how to tell a story that honors a homeland that has faded from my memory, but is integral to who I am. When my dad told me the story of my great-great-grandfather and what had happened to him, I finally knew the story I had to tell. Balik Bayan is an incredibly personal story to me. It has been very important to me in recent years to try and connect better with both my family and my heritage. Writing about it is the only thing that made sense to me. Taking the stories that have been passed down to me from my elders and combining them with my experiences as a first-generation child of immigrants. I hope to tell a story about how the very real ghosts of our past can draw us back home. And this is from artist Fabian Lelay. I'm so excited to share this chilling tale with you. The Philippines is known for its hospitality and its love for food and music, but it is also rich in the supernatural. I'm privileged to share this story in hopes to contribute to the broadening stories about cultural horror. I hope that with your support, we can deliver a story worth your patronage. Prepare to get a fright with Balik Bayan. And then they have preview pages of the comic, so I'm guessing it's like already done. It just needs to be like kickstarted so that it could be printed. Awesome. And this artwork is really, really good. So Fabian is working on the remaining pages and art will be completely wrapped by May. We will have the books ready to send out in June in time for Filipino Heritage Month in Canada. Oh, nice. So the team is Jeff Estrella, he's the writer, and he's a Toronto-based, Scarborough-raised Filipinos born writer who has been active in the Toronto comics community for over a decade. He has been featured in 3 volumes of the Toronto Comics Anthology from TO Comics Press and has self-published a short comics collection and zine. Balik Bayan will be his first full-length comic. Fabian Lelay, artist. He is a Filipino-American artist whose career has spanned between comics and TTRPGs. From telling stories through images to collaborate settings, Fabian aims to broaden representation through all mediums he is involved with. You can find Fabian's previous works with the libraries of Black Mask Studio and watch his storytelling on his award-winning channel, Bad House RPG, on Twitch and YouTube. And then there's Rayleigh McFarlane, who's going to be the colorist. And she describes herself as an illustrator, Canadian monstrosity, and dog enthusiast. She loves making art, telling stories, and D-list comic book characters. You can find her scouting for raccoons in the streets of Toronto. and then Davian Xavier Wong, he's the letterer. He writes strange and less strange stories in comics and prose. On occasion, he letters. His work has been published by Sourcepoint Press, Top Cow Productions, and Strange Horizons, and has been collected in year's best anthologies. He can be found wandering the back alleys of Toronto at night with his hound. Ooh. And then Allison O'Toole, she's the editor and publisher and is an award-winning comics editor from Toronto. Then they have a budget breakdown because they have pretty ambitious goals, I'm not going to lie. They have a breakdown of where all the money is going to go, and like to creators, printing, and all that stuff. And then they have a list of the rewards that are going to be. So on top of the digital and physical copies of Balik Bayan, they are offering incentive art and add-ons as well. So they've got prints by 2 artists, Joy San and Emmanuel Chateauneuf. Yeah. And it's really good. It's creepy. And then Fabian is offering a limited number of black and white digital figure commissions. And all right, let's get down. Okay, so they are asking for $11,499. They are currently at 2,757 with 108 backers and 27 days to go. They do have the Project We Love sticker on them from Kickstarter. So this already looks so, so promising and so, so good. So the base pledge, well, you can always pledge without expecting an award. You won't just want to show your support. But the base pledge starts at $5 Canadian, which is about $4 US. And that's just for the digital edition of the book. To get a physical copy, it's going to be $10 Canadian or about $8 US. And this is a print edition of the 24-page first chapter of Balik Bayan. So this isn't like a graphic novel. This is like the first comic issue. 24 pages is pretty good. And then there's a physical copy with a Toronto pickup that is about the same price, $8 US or $10 Canadian. And then you can have the physical copy plus the Joy San print, which is $19 US or $25 Canadian. And from there, the price keeps on going. There is a retailer tier as well for 10 copies and about $30. And there's one more tier up to that, but you can check it out for yourself. I think this sounds really, really,
it
really
does. And cool. I was looking at the Kickstarter art mm-hmm. that's on there. It's so cool, so creepy. Right? And mm-hmm. the concept just honestly is awesome. And I love comics who are taking cultural folklore and old wives' tales and really playing that up, because you know there's nothing scarier than the stories that your grandma told you late at night trying to get you to behave.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. And like, so I like, we love horror, but a lot of horror, I think up until, like, there was, of course, like, low-key horror and B-movie horror and stuff like that. And there's, like, its own, like, subculture and subgenres in too. But a lot of, like, horror that we knew, it's very white. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a trope also, like, black guy always dies. And then it's just, like, usually the virgin girl lives and the horror dies, stuff like that. Yep. But it was all very, like, or at least, because we live in America and it's, like, what it is. It was very, very, it's very white. And I don't think I really saw something that was, we grew up with our own horror stories and stuff like that. But when I think about it, there's kind of been this cultural shift in horror too, ever since Nope came out. And I think more people, when they realize, like, hey, one, there are things that, like, black people and brown people and other minorities are afraid of, but it's very different from what horror is, and there's an area to explore there. And I think now they're giving more voices or more opportunities for those stories to be told, and I think this is one of those perfect ones, because I love folklore, like myths, folk tales, urban legends, stuff like that. I absolutely adore it, and I, like, whenever I can, I try to buy, like, collections of, like, stories and stuff like that from, and, like, one, an academic perspective, but also two, like, as a storyteller and someone who grew up with, like, hearing, like, very personal stories or, like, family encounters with the spooky. It fascinates me. So I'm so stoked about this. I think this sounds really, really cool. And I like how, because I thought maybe Balik Bayan was, and I'm probably mispronouncing that too, was a name for whatever this creepy thing was. But no, it's the fact that it's just the care packages. Oh, the nuance in that. I'm just, I'm loving it. So definitely worth checking out. It is Balik Bayan, BalikBayan, The Return number 1 on Kickstarter.
All right, guys, now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have for you in our segment Juntos y Fuertes, which is our segment where we highlight projects that are being created by other creators in marginalized communities. I've been seeing this on my Facebook for the last, I don't know how many weeks. And I finally was like, I want to talk about this because it seems, it's really cool. And it is a company called CarlaAndCompany.com. It is a clothing company, and not just clothing. I guess there's other things that are, on the website. There's hoodies. I think there's, t-shirts. I thought I saw some bags, but it is a Puerto Rican mom-made site. So everything is made by this Puerto Rican mom, and it's been in existence since 2017. And the mission is to create unique, high-quality Latina products that you will love dearly. So you probably both have seen it on your Facebook page, where there's t-shirts like this. T-shirt says "Boda Rosa like mis ancestros," This here is another shirt with a very nicely depicted Virgin Mary with very nice colors being used. So the concept is that it is using the Latino culture and heritage in her clothing line. And so, and they're super, super cute. And I thought I saw bags, but that might have been something different. Oh, this is just, oh no, you can sort from like the newest to oldest. Here is, here is another one, says "Mi cultura runs through my veins," and it's like very like Dia de los Muertos colors and flowers. So I really encourage you all to go to Carla, and that's K-A-R-L-A-A-N-D-C-O, CarlaAndCompany.com, to look more into the shirts and sweatshirts and t-shirts that she has. They're all super cute, and you will be supporting a Puerto Rican mom.
Awesome. All right, guys, now it's time for saludos, and saludos goes out today to, you can follow her on Facebook at Isabel in Pieces. That's I-S-A-B as in boy, E-L-I-N, there's no spaces, P as in Paul, I-E-C-E-S. And that's Isabel in Pieces. And right now, they're taking pre-orders for her book that she wrote called Mama's Panza, or La Panza de Mama in Spanish. So you can order in both English and in Spanish. And they're pre-order at an independent bookstore. And then after you pre-order it at an independent bookstore, you can DM her your receipt, and she will forward some beautiful stickers that were inspired by the story that she is.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it said, and that the last day to do that is March 25th. So hopefully you guys can get your pre-order in and then get your free stickers. It's illustrated by Ileana Galvez, and she will send you a set of beautiful stickers from the book. So be sure to pre-order that from an independent bookstore, U.S. only, unfortunately. But yes, that deadline is March 25th. And again, that's Isabel in Pieces for the pre-order of Mama's Panza, or La Panza de Mama, in both English and Spanish. And the art looks amazingly beautiful. And I'm sure this book is inspired by her little baby boy. So saludos goes out to Isabel. Follow her on Instagram at Isabel in Pieces. Just a wonderful, wonderful woman that we will get to actually see the book. We will get to see a sneak peek of the book at Latinx Comic Arts Festival in Modesto in March. So we're very excited to see her again. Maybe we could have a few beers with her. She's super awesome.
And I want to remind everybody that we've read and reviewed two of her books on our podcast. We've read, and this is Isabel Quintero. I don't know if you actually said her last name, for those of you that want to
write. Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I didn't look her up. But the first book that we ever read by her was Photographic, The Life of Graciela Iturbide. And that was amazing. That story was so, just very, very good, and we all loved it. And then she wrote a children's book called My Poppy Has a Motorcycle.
Yes.
And I definitely recommend that you search our YouTube channel and our Las Platicas. I don't think actually it's on YouTube. It's just a regular episode.
It's an audio. It's an
this
audio
was book. When Las Platicas was back in the day before it was on YouTube. But scroll back to some of our episodes. I'm not sure which one it is, but we interviewed her on an episode of Las Platicas before it was on YouTube. It was just audio, but it's one of the best interviews we've ever done. She's so amazing. She was so such a great guest for us to have, and she really, really went deep into you know, the things that have encouraged her as a writer and as a creator and as a storyteller. So definitely check her out. That's Isabel Quintero, and I don't know what episode it is, but we definitely have interviewed her, and it's a great interview.
Absolutely. And I actually read her book Isabel in Pieces, and it's just an amazing book. It's a regular book. It doesn't have any pictures, but it was just amazing. Just God, she's just an amazingly gifted writer. So I definitely recommend you guys seek out that book. I took it on vacation with me, and I was just like, yes, this is just such an amazing book. But yeah, check that out. Saludos again to Isabel in Pieces, Isabel Quintero. Congratulations on your brand new book coming out. And thank you so much for sharing this with us, for the ability to, if you pre-order, get some free stickers. So check that out. Follow her on Instagram. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on most social media platforms. We don't do Snapchat anymore. But definitely follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Check that out. Also, be sure to make sure to follow us, because we will make some appearances on some comic conventions. For you to say hi, come on over and meet us, and maybe we could interview you to put you on our social media platforms. Where else can they find us, Kristen?
You can find us and everything you want to know about us on our website at comadrescomics.com.
Excellent. So that has been the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you in Modesto next month. So keep, hopefully you can take a trip down there. I know it's kind of a long way, but it would be really great to see you guys there. Thank you so much for listening, to following us, and also now watching us on YouTube. Have a great day. This is the end of this episode. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye.
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 And that's on Period Network.